This is Wins and Losses with Clay Travis. Clay talks with the most entertaining people in sports, entertainment, and business. Now, here's Clay Travis.
Welcome in, Wins and Losses podcast. I am Clay Travis. We try to dive into fun and interesting stories from people all around the world, sports, media, business, politics, you name it, and figure out how they ended up where they are now and some of the wins and losses they had along the way. Excited to be joined this week by Colorado men's football coach. I shouldn't have to say men, but Colorado football coach Mel Tucker, who has really done pretty well in year one with the Colorado football program so far. And we're going to bring him in and figure out how he got to where he is today. But first, Coach Tucker, appreciate you joining us, my man.
Clay, man, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All right, so first question for you, and we're going to get into a lot of other things, but when you go to work for Nick Saban, I believe as a graduate assistant,
yeah,
in your very first, I think this is your first football job coming out of Wisconsin where you had played undergrad, how many hours a week are you working? Because I like to start off with questions like that because there are a lot of people out there, 18, 22, graduating from college, who listen to this program. And my big argument is you've got to start off at the bottom somewhere, and you also got to work a lot of hours. And I can only imagine what it's like to be a GA for Nick Saban back in the day. So how did that happen, and what was that like?
Yeah, that's a good question. Coach Saban, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. My dad played at the University of Toledo football and baseball. He's in the Hall of Fame there. I came home from school one day as a senior. The phone rang. I picked it up, and it said, "This is Nick Saban from the Houston Oilers." I'm like, "Houston Oilers? What? You know, I know I'm a pretty decent player, but I'm not ready for the league yet." And he said, "I just became the head coach at the University of Toledo where your dad played, and you're my top recruit." And so that's how I got to know Nick and Coach Saban. And ultimately, I ended up going to Wisconsin, but I got to know Nick through the recruiting process. And so when I decided to get into coaching, I called Coach Saban. He was at Michigan State at the time, he said that he had a GA spot open, a graduate assistant spot open, and he basically hired me over the phone. He remembered me. And so I went to work for Nick in 97, and my approach then was I was going to try to get done in one year what it took a normal person 3 years to do. And so I figured that I only needed about 4 hours of sleep to be able to function. So that's And used to be able to get Ephedra from GNC back in the day. And so I would say, how much sleep do I need? And then the rest of the time I would just work. So I would work, you know, 19, 20 hours a day.
So this is crazy to me, like the grind on that. So when you're in school at Wisconsin, how many hours a day are you sleeping as a normal college student who's playing college football?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're probably sleeping between 6 and 8 hours a night, you know, depending on the day of the week.
So you're not one of these guys naturally who can just, like, so you basically said, I am going to do whatever I can to kill it at this job, and you just basically put yourself through almost like boot camp, right? You're just like, you thought you could get by on 4 hours a day. Was it possible?
Yeah, I got most of the week I could do that, and then I would crash some days. But there were some days like the day of a game when we had to break down tape and get the scouting report ready the next day for the coaching staff. I just wouldn't go to sleep at all, and I usually slept a lot of nights. I just slept in the office in the GA office. I would take a towel out of the locker room. I would roll it up. And I would sleep under my desk.
How much are you getting paid to be a GA at the time?
I made $400 a month for 2 years, for two seasons, approximately.
So how do you live on that?
You don't. Yeah, you don't live on that. I actually, because I took out loans.
Yeah.
Because I actually had a car. And so I had to make my car payment.
Where did you live?
I lived in kind of like a little apartment type of deal, like a kind of like a townhome type deal with maybe two or three other. There were a couple athletic trainers that were graduate assistants. They needed a roommate, and so I lived in one of those rooms. And but I wasn't there very much. But I wasn't homeless. I did have a place.
But I mean, that's crazy. That when you think about it now, because you're the head coach at Colorado, when you think about it now, is it wild to you that you would get make a pillow out of a towel and sleep underneath your desk? Like when you go back and you look at that now, does it seem crazy, or is that just how bad you wanted it that you would be willing to do that? Not just for a week or 2 weeks or something, but months at a time.
Yeah, I look back on it. It doesn't seem that crazy to me, because it was really. The other graduate assistants with me that first year was Brian Polian was one.
Yeah.
Chuck Bulla was the other one. And then Ted Ellickson, who works for Exos with the video deal now. And then Brian Dable came in the next year. So it was competitive, because back in the day, you didn't have all these analysts and quality control people. You had two GAs, and you had two on the field and two off the field. So two on each side of the ball. And so I started as an off the field GA. I was not allowed to go on the field and coach. I was working also in the weight room. I was part of the video department. I was checking classes and just really kind of inside breaking down tape and doing whatever I needed to do. And I needed to earn my spot on the field with Coach Saban. So in my mind, I had to do whatever I had to do to impress the coaching staff so that they would, the next season, the second season, that they would let me go on the field.
How tough of a boss was Nick Saban? For a 22, 23-year-old guy, how tough of a job was that?
It was interesting because for me, it was not tough for me. Because I knew Nick and when I was in high school. I knew Coach Saban in high school, and I had always had really, really tough coaches in high school, and I had a really tough coach. I had tough coaches in college. Like, I was in Coach Alvarez's first recruiting class at Wisconsin. And so, we had, Bill Callahan and Brad Childress, John Palermo, Jay Norvell. Those were my coaches in college, and so I was pretty used to that mentality and that type of grind. And Coach Saban really took a special interest in me. And even though he's a confront and demand guy, like if you do something wrong, he's going to confront you right there in front of everybody. It doesn't matter when it is. It could be in the hallway. It could be on the field. But he would always explain what he wanted and why he wanted it that way. And I really appreciated that because I felt like if I just knew what he wanted, that I could get that done for him.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
What do you attribute your toughness to? Because I think a lot of people listening to us right now, we're talking to Mel Tucker, Colorado men's football coach. I don't know why I keep saying men. But we're talking to Mel Tucker. When you break that down, I mean, a lot of people are here and, you're working 19, 20 hours a day, sleeping underneath your desk. That requires a certain level of toughness. You said you had tough coaches in college. But growing up, were your parents tough on you? Where did you kind of get that inner grit, that discipline to be willing and or able to put yourself through a job like that?
I have great parents. I have two younger brothers. We're all 8 years apart. And but I was the only child for 8 years, and my dad, he raised me as an athlete. My mom was really on me about academics and art. She's an artist.
Yeah.
But my dad even as a young, I was always, he played Sandlot baseball. you know, for many years. You know, he would work during the day, and then in the evenings he would play like AAA Sandlot baseball, and I was always like the bat boy. And
yeah,
so I got a chance to see him, you know, play through pain, and you know, and he would have strawberries on his hips from sliding in to second base or whatever. And I was always around all these older guys that some of these guys were trying to still make it in pro baseball. He was just really playing at that time for the love of the game. And my dad would always tell me stories about football when he played for Frank Lauterbur at Toledo. And he would always talk to me about toughness. And you know, he was my first coach in Little League baseball. You know, I was one of the few guys that could play every position. And I would catch for him, and even though I would have a sprained thumb, you know, he would say, Rock, my nickname was Rock. He'd say, Rock, man, I need you to catch for me today. And so I would go in there, and I would catch. Every time that ball would come in there, man, it would just, I wanted to just throw my glove across, over the fence, you know. But he just was always talking to me about, you know, old school football. And, you know, I'm from Ohio. You know, football's huge. The Cleveland Browns is big, you know, Ohio State. You know, it was just the whole culture of, you know, Midwest, Cleveland, Ohio, you know, freezing weather, you know, playing out in the street. We used to play, you know, back in the day, you know, we used to play street ball, you know, with no pads, you know, just one street versus the next, one neighborhood versus the next. And my first 8 years, we lived in the city when it was before the Cleveland Clinic came in. And kind of revamped that area, and so it was a little rough, you know, down there as well. And so you know, it was just a culture and environment of, you know, just hard nose, hard work. You know, my dad would always ask me, and my dad's the nicest guy in the world. I mean, I love him to death. I mean, he's a great person, he was a great coach for me younger, but he would always ask me, are you hurt or are you injured?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how I evaluated everything. And I think that, kind of laid a foundation for me to be able to you know, persevere through, you know, middle school, you know, high school and college, just and being around really tough coaches. I mean, coaching, you know, back in the day was, I think, was a little bit different than it is now. You know,
wasn't a lot of load management.
No, there was none of that. I can remember actually, because my dad had a friend that played at Michigan, and he worked for the gas company. He would read meters. But he also trained kids on the side. That was his hobby. And he kind of picked me up and started training me when I was in high school. So we would practice in fall. In the fall, we would do two a days, and then I would do a third with him afterwards. I did that for about two seasons. So I was just kind of used to it.
Did you want to go? You end up at Wisconsin, and you said that Nick Saban called when he got the Toledo job, and he was trying to recruit you. Did you want to go to Ohio State? Did you want to stay in the state of Ohio? How did you end up at Wisconsin?
Yeah, I wanted to go to Ohio State, like, in the worst way. That was like my dream.
Yeah.
I played basketball also, and then once I realized I wasn't going to be a big-time basketball player, I decided to really just hone in on football. And I really wanted to go to Ohio State. I think maybe that year they took Tim Walden, who's a good friend of mine. He coaches in the NFL now. And there was another defensive back they took, and they basically, you know, turned me down. And so I was.
How tough was that for you as a kid growing up in Ohio, wanting to go to Ohio State, not to get that option?
It was tough, but you know, it was the reality. I mean, you know, I knew that I was going to have other opportunities, you know, I was really grateful to have the opportunity to have a scholarship, because I knew that my parents couldn't afford to pay for my school, you know.
Right.
So, you know, initially I was committed to the Air Force Academy with Fisher.
Oh, wow.
I was a wishbone quarterback we ran the exact same offense that Air Force ran. I was watching Air Force film. My coach had me watching Air Force film since I was an eighth grader. And I was committed there, and I was going to do that. And then Coach Alvarez got the job at Wisconsin. He left Notre Dame. I think they won the national championship. He gets the Wisconsin job, and Chuck Heater was recruiting me at Notre Dame also, because they were, they had Tony Rice. They were running some wishbone stuff, and they were running some option stuff. And he called me one day. He called me one day after Coach Alvarez got the job, and I thought he was calling me to bring me in on an offer, to bring me on a visit to offer me, because he stayed in touch with me. He says, I think that there might be a shot for you to come to Notre Dame. And he called me and said, listen, Mel, he said, I can't take you here at Notre Dame, but Barry Alvarez just got the job at Wisconsin, and you should take a look, and I'm going to have them call you. And I said, okay. And then so Russ Jakes, who called me from Wisconsin, he had just been hired as the offensive coordinator. He had recruited a friend of mine named Chip Morris to Northwestern a few years earlier, so I knew Coach Jakes. He's also a Cleveland guy, a West Side guy. And he called me and said, Mel, we just got here to Wisconsin. I know that Coach Heater says a lot of good things about you. You know me from when I recruited Chip Morris. We want you to come take a look. And he said, I know you're committed to Air Force, but we want you to come take a look. I'd already used all my five visits. So my dad's friend paid for my travel up to Wisconsin. I went there on basically an unofficial, because I used all my visits. And I fell in love with the place, and it really gave me an opportunity to play Big Ten football.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
All right, I want to go to that in a sec, but I want to go back to, and we're talking to Mel Tucker, Colorado football coach. I want to go back to the Air Force. So you are committed to go to Air Force. You obviously have to be a good student. You have to have great resume, good referrals, all of those things. Do you ever wonder what your life would have become if you had gone to Air Force instead of Wisconsin?
I do. I do. I think about that quite a bit. And as a matter of fact, when I got here to Boulder,
yeah,
we had a fundraiser down in Denver, and it was Coach Fisher DeBerry was a big part of that fundraiser. And so he and I actually got a chance to talk about that a little bit, and because we've kind of stayed in touch over the years. And it was one of those deals where, my mom wanted me to go to Air Force because of the education.
Yeah.
And my dad wanted me to play in the Big Ten. And I remember saying that, that if I couldn't play at Ohio State, maybe I should just go to Wisconsin and do that. But I do think about, the military commitment, the service commitment, after, being in the academy that I think it was 5 years that I would have committed. And so it was, things would probably have been a lot different for me.
Yeah. And I'm curious, when you go to Air Force and you commit, have you flown it? Like, do they put you in a fighter jet? I mean, how do you know that you want to be potentially in the Air Force? I mean, I know everybody doesn't fly airplanes, but do you have any conception for that? Like, how did you pick Air Force over, say, Army or Navy? Was it this idea of, hey, I'd like to be a pilot one day? How do you pick it? Obviously, football factors in, but how do you pick that service academy over the others?
No, it was really football driven for me.
Yeah.
Because Sammy
they
Steinmark,
run that same offense that you were running already, I guess.
Yes, and Sammy Steinmark was recruited Cleveland, and he recruited me since I was a freshman in high school, and so I knew Sammy, and so that was always kind of in my mind about going to Air Force and running the wishbone. And then as I got as I got older and I started to take, and then it I started to take visits, you know, I fell in love with the place. You know, I flew in. I had never seen the mountains.
Yeah.
It was just a really different experience for me. And I knew that I could, do it. I knew that it would be really hard, but I knew that I could do it. They did put me in a jet while I was there.
What was that like?
It was awesome. It was great, you know, and they had just kind of shut down the tours to NORAD at that time. So I didn't get a chance to go there. But I was just kind of fascinated with the whole thing. But I had a personal relationship with Coach Steinmark. I mean, I knew him I knew him for like 4 years, and so I was very comfortable with him. And he would always tell me about how if you can graduate from the Air Force Academy, you know, you'd be set for life. And I had heard that from him so many times, and that was important to me and to my family, that I get an education and that I would be able to be, be successful in life after football. So, you know, that appealed to me. And I remember when I came back from my Wisconsin trip, and I think it was a Monday, I went to school. When I came back from school on that Monday, Coach Steinmark was sitting in my living room with my mom. My mom was in tears.
Oh,
you know. So, and then I got into coaching, and Coach Steinmark was still coaching, you know, at the time, obviously. And so, you know, he and I, you know, remain, you know, friends for many, many years.
So I want to go back to that moment. So you come back after the Wisconsin visit. This coach that you developed a great relationship with is in your house. Your mom is crying over the fact that she wants you to go to Air Force. It's hard to say no. People talk a lot about saying yes. It's also hard to say no, particularly I think about this a lot when you're a 16, 17, 18-year-old kid, and now you're in the business of recruiting those kids. So you've actually been through this yourself. How
yes.
difficult was it to say no to Air Force? Not say yes to Wisconsin, because a lot of times when you say yes, it's easy. It feels good. You're making somebody happy. Saying yes is easy. Saying no is hard. How did you have the strength there with your mom crying with that situation? It's a lot of pressure on a young kid. How did you know that Wisconsin was the right call, and how did you have the strength to say no?
Yeah, it was very difficult for me. I had a really tough time with it because I loved Coach Steinmark. I mean, he was like my guy. I really had a lot of respect for him. And you know, my mom was all about education. All she wanted me to do was, you know, get a degree and be happy. I don't think she really cared too much about football. You know, so you know, again, you know, I was an only child for like 8 years. And so,
yeah.
You know, when you're an only child, you know, you spend a lot of time alone, and just kind of, you know, taking things in and, you know, I just spent a lot of time with myself, and I knew, that I had to follow like my gut and my instinct and kind of do what I wanted to do because, you know, I was the one that was going to have to do it. And I knew that, you know, that Wisconsin was a great academic institution also. And I knew at the end of the day, as long as I graduated, my mom would be okay with it. And so, I kind of knew that my dad wanted me to, I'm a daddy's boy, you know, at the time. And so I kind of knew that my dad wanted me to play in the Big Ten if I could, you know, and I did also. And then, you know, Coach Alvarez, you know, I really hit it off with him. You know, he's a man's man. You know, he just had a lot of charisma. He had, you know, he just, you know, he was a defensive guy. And, you know, Russ Jakes, I had known him from when he recruited Chip Morris at Northwestern, so I had connections there. And Donna Shalala was the chancellor at the time at Wisconsin, and she she was from Cleveland, she was involved in my recruitment there, and so I had some connections there. I actually, you know, kind of had maybe ultimately more connection to Wisconsin, then Air Force, ultimately. And then, you know, one of my dad, one of the coaches who recruited my dad to Toledo, his name was Mario Russo. He was in the athletic department, retired from coaching, but in the athletic department at Wisconsin at that time. And so my dad felt like there were people there that would look out for me if I went to Wisconsin. And so I just had to go with my gut, and it was a really tough decision, but I tried to, once I made that decision, I tried to not to look back.
You said your mom was an artist, or is an artist.
Yeah.
What kind of art does she do?
She paints. She paints. She does. She also she sews. So she do costumes for plays.
Is she still in Cleveland today?
Yeah, my parents are in Cleveland. They're in Cleveland Heights. My middle brother is in Medina, Ohio, where I lived when I coached for the Browns, and then my youngest brothers is out in L.A. Trying to make it. He's like a photographer, hip-hop blogger, talent manager. You know, he's kind of doing his thing out there.
He's got a hyphen. He's got a hyphen in his name. He does a little bit of everything.
Yeah, he does a little bit of everything. He actually comes here to the CU games and gets a they hire him sometimes, and he gets a press pass, and he shoots photos for our games here sometimes.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
So we're talking to Mel Tucker, Colorado football coach. All right, you go to Wisconsin. Ohio is cold. Cleveland can be cold. My understanding is it probably ain't like Wisconsin cold. Were you homesick? You get up there, and in your first year, do you ever question the decision that you made?
Oh, I did. I did. I was very homesick. I was 8 hours away in the car, and I wasn't able to get home very much at all. My dad was not able to come see me play often, my dad rarely missed any game that I played growing up, so that was a lot different for me. And you know, we struggled our first year. We were 1-10. You know, I had been moved to defensive back. You know, I played both ways. I played defensive back in high school also, but you know, I spent maybe one day at quarterback, and then they moved me to corner, and it was just and I wasn't really playing a lot, and it was just a totally different deal from high school for me. And I struggled. You know, I was always one of the best players, when I got to Wisconsin, it was just a kind of a reality check for me, and it was a little bit of a culture shock as well. The cold didn't bother me because I was used to the cold. It was just my freshman year, we were sitting in the dorms. You know, my roommates and some of the freshmen, we were sitting in the dorms and over the winter and say, man, how the heck did they trick us into coming up here? You know,
yeah,
you know. And there was several times when I would call home, and I would tell my parents that I wanted that I should have gone to Air Force.
Yeah.
And be a quarterback, you know, just an option quarterback. And so, mom, you know, of course, you know, your mom wants you to be happy. So she's like, well, maybe you can leave. And my dad's like, no, it's too late. You got to stick it out, you know, and it's going to work out. So I went through that, and that really helps me, you know, dealing with, you know, to help the players that I've coached over the last, you know, 23 years. It helps me, you know, kind of relate to them as well when that happens.
Yeah, again, we got a lot of college kids or young people who listen to this, and I think that homesickness is so underrated and under-talked about if you go very far away. You know, if you're somewhere where you can't get in a car or your parents can't get to you easily, and I know technology has changed a little bit, but I was so homesick my freshman year in Washington, D.C. Like, right, I was like, I missed home so much, and I think that gets underrated, and I'm sure – you know, a lot of that is a cultural fit, you know, ending up at a city school when you're a young kid. but also for you now, having been a player but also coaching, you're bringing guys in who oftentimes are coming in and they have the responsibilities not just of academically trying to stay on top of things, but you're dealing with just a huge cultural change in your life, right? And it's a kind of an overwhelming moment for a lot of people, regular freshmen as well, but I think even more so for athletes.
Yeah, it's it was a difficult transition, not just on the football side of it, but you know, so when we moved, when I was eight, we moved from the city to University Heights, Ohio, and I went to Cleveland Heights High School. So that was the foundation of that community was a Jewish community.
Yeah.
And so it was a mixed deal. My high school was very, very diverse. But Wisconsin was not as diverse.
Yeah.
I would go into like lecture halls. As a freshman, you got whatever 101 or psych 101, are you going there? And there's 300 people in there. And there's, maybe two or three football players. We're sitting in the back, and like we're the only ones in there to look like us, And
yeah.
We're kind of sitting, like, what, this is, what's this? And, you feel like people are just staring at you, Now, whether they were or they weren't, and they probably weren't, but you kind of feel like that, So that was part of it. And, we didn't have, my dad worked. Full time, and so I didn't really qualify for like Pell Grant and stuff like that. But I didn't have money. I didn't have like any disposable money, and there was no cost of attendance back then like there is now. It was room, board, tuition, fees. That was it. So I'm up there in Wisconsin, and like I have like no money.
Literally no money in your pocket or your wallet.
Yeah, nothing. So that was no real way to get home, or for my parents to get up there often. So that was a little bit of a transition. Now the good news is that I wasn't the only one on the team like that.
Yeah.
And so my roommates, over the years, Carlos Fowler, Brent Moss, Terrell Fletcher, Lamarck Shackelford, Mike London, J.C. Dawkins, all those guys, we became very, very close, and that's kind of, how we made it through. J.C. and Brent Moss were from Racine, Wisconsin, and Shaq was from Gary, Indiana. So when we had time to go, we had a long weekend, or we had a couple of days. I spent a lot of time in Racine, Wisconsin, or in Gary, Indiana, which it was Gary, Indiana looked a lot more what I was used to, And
yeah.
So that helped quite a bit.
So I know there's all the talk about paying players and everything else, and I'm a capitalist, so I think people should be able to get compensated for their talents. But on a basic level, doesn't it seem like in a situation such as yours that part of the scholarship should include money, for instance, for your parents to be able to travel to see you play at Wisconsin? And when you look at how much some of these programs are making, doesn't it seem like to you, for parents, grandma, grandpa, family members, like that there should almost be a stipend portion of those? I mean, wouldn't you like to be able to go out to a recruit and say, hey, I understand that you live in L.A., for example, right? You're in Boulder. That is not a huge trip, but if you don't have very much money, that is a huge trip, right? So if you're recruiting against SC or UCLA and there's a kid there and he's like, man, I want my mom to be able to watch me play every game, doesn't that seem like it should be possibly out there that you could get stipends for family members to be able to come and see you play when you look at how much revenue these schools are bringing in?
I think that would really help, I don't know if that's possible, but
yeah.
I always when I'm recruiting players and I'm recruiting players from a distance, one of the questions I ask is, how long have you been playing football, and who has come to your games, and oftentimes a young man would tell me that you know, my mom, my grandmother, they've never missed a game. I've been playing since I was 8 years old, and they've been to every single game every time, you know. Or my dad has never missed a game. Or, you know, I hear that. And so, and that's part of the recruiting process, and that's one of the challenges, because sometimes I know that, you know, those the parents or the grandma or whoever, you know, they're not going to be able to see you play every and they're not going to be able to see you play in person. It's not just going to be possible. So I have to deal with that.
When you are at Wisconsin, you mentioned that the first year, like, in addition to the cultural challenges of being at Wisconsin, football's a lot better, and you suddenly maybe aren't the best player on the field or even close to it. When did you start to feel like, hey, I can play here? And did not being the best player maybe make you more aware of some of the intricacies of the game that have helped you as a coach? Because it seems to me that guys who are supremely talented don't oftentimes make great coaches because they get so frustrated because they can't make the players do what they were able to do. Right. Whereas the guys who have to be on the margins, on the edges, and kind of work on the intricacies of the game sometimes are better at teaching it. Do you think that in your own playing experience has helped you?
Yeah, it did. You know, I made my first, I had an injury plagued career at Wisconsin. It seemed like I was always like banged up. There was always something wrong with me. But I made my first start as a sophomore against Ohio State in Columbus, and I was out there with like Troy Vincent, who was one of my great friends. And so I
who now is the head of the NFLPA, right, or a VP of the NFLPA?
Yeah, he's actually, you know, he was doing some things with the league, and then he was trying to, when the D'Amore Smith deal and all that was kind of going down, he was in the running for that. And then he went and worked for the NFL, and he was kind of doing some of their player programs. He was the head of that, and then he has recently been elevated, and he works, you know, right alongside Roger Goodell now. And, you know, after the first day or so of the draft, he's the guy that announces the names.
Right. Okay, my bad. Yeah, he's on the NFL side, but he's very highly highly ranked in the NFL.
Yeah, very, very highly ranked. And so, you know, I knew I could play, you know, but being a backup or, you know, a part-time player, a special teams guy, you know, kind of a rotational guy, you know, you don't always get reps with the ones, you know, so you have to still know the game plan without getting the reps. And then, you know, you have to kind of really, really pay attention. So, you know, I had some really good coaches, position coaches like Paul Jett and the late Tom McMahon, God rest his soul. I had really good coaches that they were really technical, and that I knew, like, these guys really know what they're doing. Coach Alvarez was a great defensive coach. I would watch those guys. I was always a left wing on the punt team for Bill Callahan, so he became a mentor of mine, a guy that I loved. And so I had really good coaches at Wisconsin, so I was able to learn like how to coach playing for those guys, because they were like fundamentally sound, like great technical teachers, and I just really, really paid attention. I didn't know that I wanted to be a coach, but I learned a lot from those guys. And then I mentioned Troy Vincent and what he's doing now, but it's amazing. You know, the guys that were on that team, you know, my teammates and friends of mine, Chris Ballard, the GM for the Colts, was a teammate of mine there. We've been great friends. Todd Orlando, the defensive coordinator at Texas, was a teammate of mine at Wisconsin. Daryl Bevel, formerly offensive coordinator at Seattle, and is a great coach in the league. He was our quarterback. Joe Rudolph, I believe, offensive coordinator at Wisconsin now, he and I took recruiting trips together in high school, you know, because he's from Pennsylvania. We end up on some of the same trips. You know, Dewar Sharp was commissioner of the SWAC, was there. So it's amazing how many guys on that team are still in football now doing some pretty significant things.
So when you become a GA at Michigan State for Nick Saban back in the day, Did you know immediately then coaching is for me, or was it just something that you did to test out? How quickly did you know this is maybe the job that I'm going to pursue?
Yeah, I had kind of been away from ball for, you know, a couple of years because I graduated in May of 95, and this was 97 when I started.
So what did you do? What did you do from May of 95 till you started as GA?
I volunteered at my high school, coaching like basketball and football, you know, just helping out. And then I did some substitute teaching.
A lot of people who graduate from college, you're trying to figure out what you want to do with your career path. Do you move back in with mom and dad?
Yeah, I moved back in, and you know, I was actually still trying to play.
Yeah.
You know, because I had signed with the Hamilton Tiger Cats, you know, come out of Wisconsin, and in the transition from Wisconsin to reporting to training camp, I went home for a couple of days, and my youngest brother Jordan had the chicken pox. And I contracted it. I didn't know that until I got there, until I got to Hamilton, and I got really, really sick. And I almost died from the pox. So they sent me home. They said, you know, we got to send you home, and then after you get well, we'll bring you back. But by the time I got over that chicken pox deal, I had you know, because I was a little bit older, I think it's a little bit more severe when you're older.
Yeah, that's crazy. So, but you said you almost died?
I mean, I went down to, I was 190, I was 200 pounds. Man, I think I went down to maybe 165 pounds.
So did you have to get hospitalized from chicken pox?
They put me on some type of meds, and I think I had an allergic reaction to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I didn't sleep for maybe, you know, 3 or 4 days. I couldn't eat. You know, it just kind of wiped me out, and then, you know, I didn't think I was going to make it. And then they changed my medication and I got better, but I felt like I was kind of on the brink, you know? And so I never really, you know, so I wanted to try to, you know, build myself back up and play again. And I had a couple of workouts, but I just never could really get back to the point. I never wanted to be one of those guys that was always trying out and bouncing around and trying out. So I just gave it up, and I just said I got to figure out what I'm going to do. And so I kind of went back to my high school, and I kind of volunteered coaching, and I kind of liked it, and that's kind of how I decided I was going to try the college ranks.
And that's what I talked about. We talked about the culture shock to Wisconsin. What's the culture shock like going to LSU?
LSU was like, I got down there. I'm like, man, do I need a passport to be here or what? I mean, like,
it is crazy.
Yeah, it was so much different, you know, and it was like almost being like in a different country. But I absolutely loved it. I gained 15 pounds down there, and I haven't been able to lose that last 15. I mean, just the culture, the food, and the football was kind of what I was used to. You know, it was just a really intense. But it's a different feel down there. They want to win so bad, it almost feels like it's almost kind of dangerous down there.
Yeah.
You know, I can remember coming out of my office like after work on Thursday, and they would already be tailgating out in the park lot on Thursday. And people would just come up to you right away. Like when I first got there, they'd say, hey, Mel, nice to meet you. You guys know if you don't win, you're out of here. I mean, that was just common. You know, that's just how it was. And so, Tiger Stadium on a Saturday night, bro, let me tell you, it's something else. So, I liked it. I went to Mardi Gras. I went down there on Fat Tuesday. I took that all in. But it was quite an experience.
So you've coached in the NFL and in college, and you've been a head coach as an interim in the NFL and in college. Which do you like more and why?
I like them both for different reasons. You know, the NFL, I went to the NFL because I was trying to follow Coach Saban's kind of his career path. You know, he was a college coach. He went to the NFL. He told me, you know, early on that you're going to have to go to the NFL at some point, you know, to really, you know, learn ball. some more ball and become a better coach. And so that's why I went. I went to the Cleveland Browns, and I wanted to learn the Bill Belichick 3-4 from Romeo Crennel. I did that, and I really love coaching in the NFL. It was like getting a PhD. All you do 24 hours a day is just all ball, just coaching. You know, coaching pro players. You know, guys that are making a lot more money than you. And so that was a challenge, and I really loved it. And I became, I felt like I was successful doing that. But there's a, coaching college is a little bit different. You know these guys. You know, like some of these guys I recruited when they were sophomores, freshmen in high school, like Ted Ginn Jr. You know, I've known Teddy since he was like 11 years old.
Yeah.
You know, Dante Whitner, Troy Smith, Heisman Trophy guys. I mean, I recruited Troy when he was at St. Ed's before he transferred to Glenville, before we got him at Ohio State. So you just have those connections with the high school coaches and the families and the kids. And then you bring them to college, and you're responsible for them. You're almost like a kind of like a parent away from home. And you're a role model, and they need you. That's like a huge responsibility, but I really enjoyed that part of it, and seeing helping guys like work towards a degree and develop them on the field was very, very gratifying to me, and that's why I decided to come back to the college game in 2015 at Alabama with Coach Saban.
So you've coached with Coach Saban. How are Coach Saban and Kirby Smart, who you've also coached with, different? Because there's a lot of people who say, okay, Kirby Smart's doing at Georgia what Nick Saban did at Alabama, recruiting at a high level, defensive first guy. You've worked with both of them. How are they similar? How are they different?
And I think a lot of, when you work for Nick, that long, I worked for him 3 times. There's, other guys that have been kind of saving guys, or Belichick guys. You kind of use a very similar blueprint because it works. It's successful, and so in that way, at Georgia, we had a very similar blueprint for success, very similar process, but. They're totally different people, they're both, great coaches, very intense, but, everyone's just so different. Everyone's got their own style of coaching, and I think Kirby does a great job of like just not trying to be Nick and just being himself. And that's, that's what I try to do. I'm not trying to be anyone else. Nick Saban is, you really can't even compare him to anyone. Everyone's just so unique. I've known Coach Saban just so long. Sometimes I feel like he could start a sentence and I could finish it. Very similar structure. In the programs, totally different personalities.
What's the happiest you've ever been on a football field as a coach or player?
Man, that's a good question. This may sound disingenuous, but I told my players after the Stanford game that we just had, that we won like 16-13. It was a walk off field goal. Now we had lost 5 games in a row. We had some gut wrenching losses and. I told those guys. I told them in the locker room after the game. I said, guys, that was my 300th football game that I've coached in as an assistant coach or a head coach. And I said, I've coached 300 games. I've got 2 national championships. I've been in a lot of big games. Won a lot of big games. But I told those guys, and I've really meant that. I've never been prouder of a group of guys, players, and coaches than I was this past Saturday. And I think it's because I am in the head coach here. And it is the first year, and it was, we've had some challenges, shifting the culture here, learning how to win. And we beat a team, a Stanford team that's very well coached. I have a tremendous amount of respect for David Shaw, but You know, we won playing complementary football, offense, defense, and special teams, you know, all working together. Guys were playing for each other. And it was a physical football game. Stanford is known for being physical and fundamentally sound. We only had 5 penalties. We were able to run the ball. We stopped the run. Special teams, we won the field position battle. You know, we at the end of the game, our offense, we had our last 2 drives were over 6 minutes each. We got some keys. That was the best defensive game we played all season, holding them to 13 points. You know, we're playing a lot of young players, and we were able to take the clock down, call timeout with 2 seconds, run the field goal team out there. We had a freshman kicker. He was our backup, our starter. Was down, and he goes in there and knocks it straight through, you know, at home on homecoming, you know, after losing 5 straight games. So I can honestly say that was probably the most gratifying moment of my coaching career.
All right, what about as the most disappointing moment? What's the toughest loss?
The toughest loss, even though that Georgia-Alabama a couple years ago in the national championship game, that was devastating because I felt like we had them. That was tough, and even last year in the SEC championship game was brutal. But probably the toughest loss was 2002. We go 14-0, and we win the national championship. We beat Miami in the Fiesta Bowl. The very next year, we're rolling. We go to Wisconsin, and I'm coaching the secondary, we come back. We got them beat. It's in the rain. We're undefeated. We knock the quarterback out. The backup quarterback goes in. Brian White, the offensive coordinator, calls an out and up. And Chris Gamble, my first round corner, gets beat on an out and up for a touchdown. Game over, and no more national championship consideration at that point. And, you know, when you win one, you go 14-0, you always think you're going to win another one, you know. And I didn't get another one until 2015. And so I can remember the Andy Geiger, the athletic director, coming over to my locker. And I can remember those guys saying, you know, just saying like, hey, man, just get dressed. You know, let's go. Let's get out of here. And because I felt like as a coach, I felt like I lost that game because I felt like I didn't have my player, Chris Gamble, who's a great player, first round player. I feel like I didn't have him prepared for the double moves.
That's interesting. Now you're at Colorado, and I know you got a lot of interesting fans out of Colorado. I'm a big fan of South Park, and I understand that you've met Matt Stone and Trey Parker, who are South Park guys, but also Boulder guys, right? They're from Colorado.
Yeah, I haven't met them, you know, but we've been in conversation with them, Dave Platty here and others, trying to arrange for them on when they get a little less busy to come onto my podcast.
Oh, that would be pretty cool.
And so I'm looking forward to doing that. And I didn't know that the South Park guys, I didn't know they were CU guys. I didn't know they were Boulder guys. You know, I didn't know the origination. So when I got here and, you know, they started talking about South Park, I'm like, really? These guys are CU guys? I got to get with these guys. You know what I mean? So I'm really looking forward to that.
And last couple of questions for you here. What do you do when you're not coaching football? I know you said you slept 4 hours a day when you were working as a GA, so I know those hours all factor in. But you got 2 young sons, teenage boys, and I didn't even ask you, but when did you meet your wife, and how has she balanced out the coach's wife lifestyle?
Yeah, I met my wife in Cleveland on a blind date. She was in law school at Rutgers at the time, and this was like before I got into coaching. And
who set up the blind date?
My roommate's Shaq's ex-girlfriend, who was her roommate at Rutgers, also in law school, set it up. They were coming to Cleveland for a job fair.
And so you guys go where for dinner or for a date, or what did you do?
Yeah, we went down, like, down in the flats down there to, like, I think it was called, like, the firehouse where you play, shoot pool and do all that stuff. So
did you think immediately, like, this could be the one, or how did that happen?
Yeah, it kind of happened like that. It was kind of like, I kind of asked her to marry me on the that night. Yeah,
the first date.
Yeah.
No way. So you go out to and you're like, this is it, and like jokingly you said marry me, or you were like, I'm convinced this is the one.
Yeah, I wasn't joking. I'm kind of one of those guys that, you know, I don't like to wait around. I kind of, once I kind of see the direction I need to go, I'm trying to get there as fast as I can.
So what did she say?
She said, yeah. She was like, yeah, let's go.
So how soon did you get?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
So how soon did you get married, like after you started dating?
Yeah, after I got my first full-time job at Miami of Ohio with the late Terry Hepner, that the summer before that season we got married in Chicago. She's from Chicago.
And you've been dating, how long?
We have been dating. That was 1999 when I got that job. I think I met her in like 96 maybe.
So
it was kind of like a long distance deal, yeah.
But so you are at the time dating a potential lawyer, right? She's going to Rutgers, and you are a guy trying to work your way up. So at that time, like, you're kind of outkicking your coverage, getting a lawyer that you're marrying because you're, you know, just kind of becoming a coach. Now she is married to one of the, you know, one of the big five coaches in a major conference. So does she like look over your contract stuff as the lawyer? Do you have her rep you?
No, she doesn't represent me. Maybe some of those initial contracts.
Back in the day.
Yeah, she looked over those, but I've actually got some folks to do that for me now.
It's funny. I have my wife do stuff for me, and she's quit like three different times because she says I'm an awful boss. So it's probably good to have other people instead of her in charge. Okay, so last question for you. You almost ended up at Air Force. You instead go to Wisconsin. You work your way all the way to become the head coach at Colorado. Do you feel like in some way you finally got to the state of Colorado where you almost went when you were 18 years old, a kid coming out of high school? And if so, how successful can you be at Colorado? How high can you rise?
No, it's interesting that you should bring that up because once I always remembered the mountains from that Air Force trip, and I would since then, you know, we would go vacation in Lake Tahoe. I just loved that whole scene, you know. So when this Wisconsin opportunity came up, you know, that was part of my thinking that I would have an opportunity to be, you know, right there, you know, in the mountains, and because it was just the air. Felt a lot different than Cleveland.
Yeah.
You know, it was really clean. It was really sunny. It was just a whole different vibe for me. It was like it was very kind of like motivating and energizing to me as a person. And so I've been kind of drawn to that ever since then. So I definitely felt like I was finally going to you know, be in that environment that appealed to me, you know, as a teenager, you know, as a 17, 18-year-old. And so how successful can we be here? You know, I don't believe in self-imposed limitations. I've never coached in a football game or been any place, including Miami, Ohio, where we weren't expected to win every single game every time. And so my goal and our goal here is to win a national championship and be in that national championship conversation year in and year out. And we're going to do that through shifting the culture here and through recruiting. And we are relentless recruiters. We recruit every single day. Recruiting is going well here. I anticipate us being able to win a national championship here and be one of the premier programs in America. If I didn't think we could do that here, I would not be here.
Coach, good luck to you. I appreciate all the time, I think people are really going to enjoy this. If you like it and want to give feedback to Coach Tucker, he's at Coach_M Tucker on Twitter. You can track him down there again, at Coach_M Tucker. I'll tweet it out as well. Appreciate the time, my man. Good luck.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
That is Mel Tucker. He is the head coach of Colorado football. And this has been the Wins and Losses podcast with Clay Travis.